from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi, I'm Bill DeYoung, and this is Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. I'm so happy to be here with Chelsea Gallo, who is resident conductor of the Florida Orchestra. Hello.
Hi there. Very happy to be here.
So we met you a year ago when you came in, and you came in as assistant conductor, I think, because I don't know the terminology exactly. What's the difference? What was your promotion here?
Sure. I think in general, a lot of orchestras in the United States, they have a not a ranking system, but just a hierarchy of the responsibility of the associate or the assistant. Most often it goes staff, assistant, associate, resident. And I just love it here. We had great rapport last season, the musicians and I, and so they decided to give me a little bump.
You had, before you came here, you had guest conducted all over the country and around the world, and you had a lot of different conducting gigs where you were in Detroit for a while, you were at Loyola for a while. What was it about Florida that spoke to you?
Actually, it was Michael Francis who spoke to me. When I was working for the Detroit Symphony, he came and I think he guest conducted the opening of the 2020 season, 2019 season. And he did such an exceptional job with the orchestra. And he was one of the few conductors who actually wanted to participate in the pre-concert talks with me. Mm. That happens very rarely. And he had brought such a fresh take and almost ethos to the music that he was working on. And then later down the road, when I saw that a job here at the Florida Orchestra, his orchestra opened up, I thought I have to give it a shot.
I mean, the Florida Orchestra's been around for a while. I mean, but you'd never been down here before.
No, I had never worked in Florida before. The closest I had gotten to Florida really was working in Louisiana for the Louisiana Philharmonic and at Loyola.
Yeah.
And then over in Texas a little bit, and then a little bit in South Carolina, but no, never all the way down here.
So you studied in Vienna and Slovakia.
Slovakia, it's right on to the east of Austria, and it's actually the two closest capitals in Europe, Vienna and Bratislava.
Mm-hmm. That's where Bratislava is, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And Slovakia, it's a wonderful country, so warm, and the people are incredible. The food's very good, if you're a beer and meat kind of person, obviously. It was wonderful, and I got to, you know, during my degree, I was able to work with wonderful orchestras in Austria and in Czechia and Slovakia, and it was just wonderful.
What was the spark, Chelsea, that set you off? I mean, in my experience, people who conduct are generally musicians, and they kind of make that leap or that wander that road or whatever the metaphor is. What was it? Are you a musician as well? And what set you on the goal on that I'm going to be a conductor?
Yes, I started playing violin and piano when I was 4 years old. Mm. I had parents who really encouraged musical pursuits, which was wonderful. But in general, we like to say about conductors that you kind of come from two different paths. Either you yourself as a musician look at a conductor and think, oh, I can do that so much better. Or someone looks at you as a musician and thinks, this person could be a conductor. And I was very fortunate to be in that latter mm-hmm. category. It was towards the end of my undergraduate degree that the conductor came to me and said, hey, do you want to conduct? And I said, absolutely not. That's terrifying. Why would I want to do that? Mm. And he really thought that this was something I could try. And so I did. And I was so young and had no idea about anything to the point where things had been going well. And he said, why don't you consider studying conducting for graduate school? And I said, well, where am I supposed to do that? He said, Vienna. And I said, I've never been to Italy. Like, that's how little I knew at the time.
Oh, Vienna, Italy. Yeah, yeah. They have great restaurants there, don't they?
Well, I mean, I was just a kid. I was just a kid who loved to play the violin, loved to play piano, loved to play sports. Mm-hmm. And I loved being close to home. But, you know, life changes. And
Where did your undergrad studies? Where
Washington
was
State University.
Oh.
Go Cougs. It was a blast.
You're from Michigan, though.
I was born in Texas, but my family's from California.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you end up in Washington State?
My family moved up there when, I don't remember, when I was maybe 10 or so, and I played in the Tacoma Youth Symphony and continued musical pursuits. But it's, you know, when you're a conductor, you don't start being a conductor when you're 4 or when you're 7. Mm-hmm. The only path to becoming a conductor is to become the most fully formed musician you possibly can. So it makes sense that you think I'm from Michigan, because really the primordial moments of becoming a conductor were from Vienna and Michigan.
Yeah.
And because I sound like this, you know I'm not from Vienna.
So, Vienna, Italy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard of it. When you went to get your doctorate, you're at UM.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, after Europe and all of that. Mm-hmm. Are you fixed on the goal at that point? This is because you got a doctorate in orchestral and opera conducting, mm-hmm. which sounds very specific to me. So were you, it was eyes on the prize. This is what I'm doing at that point. You were sure you'd made the right decision by then.
By then, you know, the whole time during this amazing pathway of conducting, there have been different avenues to take, choices to be made. And at the moment of decision, when I had to decide, am I going back to the States or am I going to stay here in Europe to go to a different institution? I just went to my family and I said, what should I do? And we all thought, you know, a doctorate from Michigan was the best course of action. No regrets. Absolutely wonderful time, wonderful mm-hmm. school, wonderful people, a highly, highly refined and capable Department of Music, which really led to wonderful friendships and a lot of opportunities.
Where do your own personal tastes lie in music? I mean, what composers kind of did it for you? Like, I really want to work on interpreting this.
One of the first scores I ever opened when I was in youth orchestra, it was Overture to Candide by Leonard Bernstein. Because we were playing it in youth orchestra. I was maybe like 13 or 14 or something. And I didn't even understand what I was looking at. I thought I was looking at how the instruments were organized on the side of the page. Mm. I didn't even realize that that's how it worked. Now, you know, it's so easy to take for granted now how music is organized. Mm-hmm. Or when you're young and you're learning your instrument or you're learning how to read music, it just comes off like a little language. Like, it just makes sense. My mom has this absolutely ridiculous story that she whips out during parties where, because I was so young, when I was 3 is when I took my first music classes. And after every 4 letters, when I would write words, I would put a line because I thought things were organized in 4s.
Wow.
So I would write my name, C-H-E-L, line, S-E-A, line. My parents thought I didn't know how to spell my name. They thought something was wrong with this kid.
She's a musician. That's what it is.
They figured it out.
But what composers really sort of turned your head? Like, this is just so beautiful, I can't stand it.
It's Mahler. When I was around that same time, actually, my parents, they gave me a DVD of Sir Simon Rattle's inaugural season with the Berlin Philharmonic. And on that concert, on that program, he conducted Mahler's Fifth Symphony. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what was going on. It was a shock to hear that kind of sound happen, especially after this opening with one individual voice, and suddenly the world erupts. And it takes place with people who look so good at what they do. They look like what they're doing, which is a kind of a weird concept. The only parallel really is when you look at athletes. When you look at somebody playing basketball, you realize the only thing that they're doing is being a basketball player. Mm-hmm. And then also they're making this music in this place that looks unbelievable. It looks like a church. It looks sacred. I was hooked.
I can still see it in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Why opera? And I should ask, you know, again, repeating my earlier ignorant question, what's the difference? And is there, opera is theater. It's, in a way, it's musical theater, as we all know. But, you know, as a conductor, you just have to be aware of the silences and let the singers have their space.
Sort of. Opera is perhaps the epitomizing synthesis of artistic collaboration. You have everything from the music, the wordless music created by the pit musicians. You have the sung text by the musicians on stage, the singers, and then they're acting on top of that. You have their costuming, their makeup. You have the lights. You have the sets. You have all the stage directors organizing the acting taking place. It's an immense amount of work. There's no parallel to anything. I mean, if you look at what it takes to construct something, some incredible feat of human engineering, the James Webb Telescope, for example, $30 billion, 124 different engineers for only 14 of the components in 20 different countries across 30 years.
You wrote a thesis about this. Oh. Something, and did I get that right? Something to do with how conducting a symphony is like sending the space shuttle into space or something.
Almost, how running a symphony orchestra is.
I got it in there somewhere.
Well, I did do some work in collaboration with some events for NASA and Lockheed Martin, but then there was this lecture series that we did separately from that where we compared running a symphony orchestra and running a nuclear reactor and the different things that are required of each, but how very similar they actually are. One of them being addressing public perception. You know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
How do you balance discipline and following structure and where the medium is at the moment versus being groundbreaking, moving forward, knowing how to read what the future holds? It's a very complex topic.
Yeah, also that makes me think of the idea that a composer has written this, you know, hundreds of years ago in many cases. It's there on the paper. Talk to me, if you will, about interpretation, about what a conductor does. I mean, is it your job to say, this is what Mozart wanted, I'm doing this, or to bring you into it?
I would say that the job of the conductor used to be to tell a group of musicians, this is how it's going. Now that language and that leadership style has changed to say to the musicians, this is how I think this should go. And it's a very different type of merging of ideas, because one of the hardest things to do as a conductor and one of the most gratifying is to bring your idea to the first moment with the orchestra, the first moment of sound creation, and to listen to how your idea is being created, but at the same time listening to how they're sharing their ideas with you. And you have to know the score so well, you have to know every possible moment so well, that you're willing within 1/100th of a second to say, that musician has a better idea, we're going to go with that, I'm going to get rid of that. Okay, that's going to affect what happens in the recapitulation, and so we're going to do that together, let's see if that works. It's amazing.
That's an awesome responsibility too, isn't it? And I mean, in the back of your head, are you saying, well, would, you know, Wolfgang approve this, you know, or am I true to the composer's vision? Or does that just go out the window when you get in the driver's seat?
It is the window. It is the guiding light, what the composer's intentions are. But then if you have the ability and good fortune to have time to read about these composers and try your best to identify with their personalities, you think, hey, I think Mozart would have really enjoyed taking, you know, this kind of bold step, or I think he would have really encouraged this type of reaction to sound production or being manipulative here. And then there are some composers who are very specific about what they want. For example, Bartok, when he says he wants a movement to only last a minute and 36 seconds, he means it. So knowing these composers and what they want behind their music, it's another additive challenge. I had a teacher once describe conducting almost like a chest of drawers, the way he described it. He said, in this chest of drawers, when you start out conducting, you might have three drawers. You have the patterns that you need to be able to conduct, the language that you use to talk to the musicians, and then your ability to communicate it. And so you fill your drawers, and then when you need those talents, you access them. But then as you continue on longer and longer on your path of conducting, suddenly you don't have just drawers and a chest. You have whole buildings of floors full of ideas and experiences and musicians and recall and the ideas of the future and what you want sound to be, and just adding in all of these extra elements. So the more you grow as a person, your drawers grow as well.
Is it ever just a job, or is that always exciting every time you get up there?
You know, there is a fatigue that happens, but like Taylor Swift says, I get tired, but I never get tired of it. You can get tired of aspects of the job because it is a job. I mean, you have to file taxes, right? But the music itself, the musicians, getting to know them, I'm never exhausted of it.
Are there a lot of women conductors?
There are certainly more than there used to be. We kind of have this initiating moment, more or less. There were people before her, but this initiating moment in the modern era, with a woman named Maren Alsop. She was a student of Leonard Bernstein in New York. Mm-hmm. And since she came to the front, there's been quite a development of women accessing this career path. Before her, there were some really talented women like Sarah Caldwell in Boston. She did the Boston Opera. And in a contemporary of Maren Alsop would be Joanne Faletta or Diane Wittrey. There seems to be a threshold that young conducting women kind of ascend to, and then those who remain in the field, it kind of trickles off a little bit. It could be all sorts of things.
Remain in the field? You mean some sort of say, I don't want to do this anymore? Or
sort of, actually. Well. Maybe they choose other paths. They choose, you know, becoming mothers. And some people don't want to do both, which is absolutely a wonderful choice to make. Sure. The other thing is that it's just hard, because the farther you go through this career, the fewer jobs there are. And obviously, everyone has to work hard for highly coveted positions.
Did you see Tar?
Yeah, I saw Tar. Yeah.
Speaking of how hard the work is, that's the first thing I thought of. You just conducted the Pops in the Park concert at Vinoy Park. Mm-hmm. Tell me what that was like. A lot of people?
Oh, so many people. We think probably around 15,000. Had the very wonderful fortune of conducting it last year as well. It's a wonderful energy. It's so great to have such a beautiful space to perform in with lovely people in one of the greatest cities in Florida. It can't be beat.
The concert is repeated November the 5th in a place called River Tower Park in Tampa. On the 3rd and 4th, you're conducting a program called
Women Rock, yes.
Yes, okay. Tell us about this one.
That's going to be the musicians of the Florida Orchestra on stage at the various halls we perform in, and we'll be accompanied by a rock band of women performing some of the greatest hits written or sung by women.
So it's Tina Turner, Stevie Nicks, Pat Benatar, the usual suspects.
Yes, totally.
That's cool. What do you look forward to after that? What's coming for you after that down the road? I don't have this season memorized. There's a lot of great things. And I guess Michael, he's the boss, gets to do all the masterwork stuff.
Obviously, I'm beyond excited for the concerts that I get to perform.
Yeah.
But getting to be around the orchestra when they're performing some of the masterwork series is fantastic. Coming up this season, we have Ein Heldenleben by Richard Strauss, and that means a hero's life. And it's this huge, giant, massive depiction of, you know, the circle of what a hero goes through.
Mm.
The outset on a journey, something bad happens, the hero's transformed, returns to the thing that challenged him to begin with, and then is completely a new person. The hero's paradigm. But it's put to music without words. It's wonderful. And then at the end of the season, we have perhaps the most monumental, just in terms of sheer size, symphonies that we have, Mahler's Resurrection Symphony, that concludes our season. That's going to be unreal.
You've worked with a lot of orchestras. Talk to me about the Florida Orchestra. I mean, Michael is quite eloquent, of course, in talking about how great these musicians are. What do you say?
Oh, I would be so effusive about our musicians. They're exceptionally talented, but they're also incredibly warm. There are orchestras out there, and they'd be the first to tell you that they're not that happy for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be the culture of that institution. It could be things going on in that particular city.
Could be that Cate Blanchett is the conductor.
It could be that. It could be that there are fist fights on stage. You never know. But with the Florida Orchestra, the musicians, they're just exceptionally talented. It could be that they get to live in such a beautiful place like the Tampa Bay area. But I think they themselves are just such interesting people. There's a variety of not hobbies, but interests that come from them. We have people in the orchestra who have incredible intricacies about their own personalities that I think bleeds over into how they perform music. So there's this horrible, silly thing that people say about orchestras. Oh, orchestras are just cover bands. Every orchestra plays Beethoven's Fifth.
Mm.
It's just a cover, right? No, it's not. It's not, because the unique experience with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, maybe 65 musicians coordinated together wordlessly doing something, that's not just a cover band.
Community outreach is very important to the Florida Orchestra. It seems to me that when Mr. Cantrell, I used to talk to all the time, who's not around the orchestra anymore, used to talk so much about how important it was to reiterate to the community that we're here for you and that this kind of music can happen anywhere. You don't have to go to the concert hall. How do you feel about that, about outreach and going out in the community?
Your local orchestra is the reflection of where your current community culture sits. It serves two purposes. In one moment, it's the mirror for you to see what your community looks like. And to know what it looks like, you have to go look. You have to go see and hear what we're doing. But at the same time, we make choices that show our community what our citizenship could feel like, what our identity could be. Very forward thinking. So your local symphony orchestra will always be what you need at that moment. Do you need to be encouraged and reinforced in the goodness and value of your current community? Or do you feel like I need to go somewhere to know what my community could look like, how I could be a part of it? No one has ever come to one of our concerts and left thinking, that was not a great display of my culture here right now. I think that's the thing that we do the most consistently when it comes to culture. And of course, we do lots of outreach. We have lots of very tangible things as well. We do a lot of programs with kids. We do a lot of programs with the elderly. Anything that benefits from what we do, we seek out those opportunities and make them happen.
Chelsea Gallo, such a pleasure to speak with you today. And we'll see you up on the podium on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for having me.
From stpcatalyst.com.